Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. Welcome back to The Obvious Choice podcast. We are continuing here part two with the marketing of The Obvious Choice book. Well, I'm getting deep into the weeds of everything that I did, kind of approaching the marketing, and then now coming into the final push of the launch of the thing. And keep in mind, as I said in part one, the book has not actually come out yet as of this recording. And so what I'm doing is I am reporting on what I did and the reasons why I did it and how it has all felt and how I felt like I've executed upon it, or in the case of something that I talked about in the last episode, you know, not executed particularly well, good idea, executed poorly. And today what I'm continuing on with is content, how we kind of like decided on what content to post, tested it in the months leading up so that in the month approaching the launch itself, particularly like the 10 days approaching the launch itself, we knew that what we were going to be posting to social media is going to be winners. I'm going to talk about ManyChat automations, particularly why I'm switching now, like 10 days out, 15 days out from the launch, from pushing pre-orders to pushing a free chapter, kind of the mindset behind that. And then what I'm doing actually in the launch itself, podcasts and podcast touring and where that fits in and where that doesn't fit in. That was actually one of the biggest changes and course corrections that I made throughout. Lead magnets and stuff for kind of starting to gather the right kind of audience for the book, a lead magnet that I created, what I'm doing with the VIP boxes, the thought process behind that, how detailed we are with these VIP influencer boxes, and then strategic bulk buys and even more, and then kind of continuing on, you know, from that strategic long-term strategy.
It's way too much work.
It's been a tremendous amount of work. And the truth of the matter is, when a friend of mine asked me yesterday, actually, he asked me how I'm feeling with the book launch. And again, keep in mind, this is January 8th we're recording this. The book comes out January 14th, so I'm just about a week out. And what I told him is that I'm just really tired. Right. And in all honesty, in every sense of the word, it feels like I have everything to do and not much to do at the same time. Where, you know, this launch, a lot of the work that we've done is pushing pre-orders, networking. You heard a lot about that in the beginning. Like, we really started this launch like 8 months ago, the planning of it. That's not to mention, of course, the writing of the book. But all along the way, it kind of felt like something that was in the future, if that makes sense. And here's what I said to my friend. I'm like, it's like, you know, you know you've got a really long hike to go up a mountain. You prepare for it. You train for it. You start hiking up this mountain and it's hard, but all the way through, you know that you've got a lot longer to keep going and you're energized and you're eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and you're happy and whatever, and you're happy working hard, but then you get just right towards the end. And for anybody who's ever hiked up a mountain, there's always this point that you get to just before the end where it's like a steep last little bit up. That's the point where I feel like I'm at right now. It's this steep last little bit up. I'm exhausted. I've been going for so long and I'm out of water and I've eaten all my snacks.
That's awful.
It is and it isn't. You know what's been keeping me through? Is, again, looking at this launch like it's the beginning of a 10-year flywheel. Not putting too much pressure on this launch actually performing. I'm realistic, right? I'm realistic. This is a book for a new market, many of whom I have not built an existing reputation. And so it's going to start from the fitness and health industries mostly, and then expand outside of it. It's also a business book, right? Business books require a fair bit of time to become kind of underground sensations and then build their way into the kind of cultural marketing zeitgeist of being the thing that's recommended. It's going to take years, I think, for this book to begin to be recognized as what I hope a perennial seller, a go-to in this industry. And that might or might not happen. But looking at it that way and saying, this is a long-term lens. I need the launch to be a celebration of all the work that I've done, not pressure that it has to lift this book up to new levels, right? This is not a one-and-done thing for me. So anyway, getting back to what I'm doing. So the months leading up to where we're at right now in January for the book launch, we were testing a whole bunch of stories and ideas across social media. Some of it is content from the book, some of it is not, some of it is iterations on existing posts and tweets and stuff like that that I've done. And we were testing a whole bunch of different types of individual tweets and threads and things like that. Knowing that, we wanted to repurpose the winners right around launch without any losers in between. Right? And so I'll give you an example of one of these. So I have this series of like lessons that I've learned over the years. And I've probably posted this 7 times now across Twitter and across Instagram. And each time we post it, particularly on Twitter, you can actually look at how many people like and engage with each individual tweet, each individual slide, right? And so each time that I post it, what we'll do is we will change the order based off of which ones get the most or the least engagement. We'll remove the ones that don't perform. And then the individual tweets that we're putting out in between them, the ones that perform really well, we'll insert now into that thread. Basically, data-driven, iterating on this one thread, knowing that it's a banger, knowing that there's no holes over time. That's the big thread that we're going to post, that we're going to put a whole bunch of distribution behind across Twitter. Knowing that that thread will probably reach 500,000 people on Twitter from my account of 19,500. And it's a surefire bet because we've tested it. Because we've tested every slide, all of the wordings of the different slide, the order of it, right? So that's just one example of kind of planning and iterating and testing on content that goes on behind the scenes that you often don't see. When you see me posting like individual tweets, those tweets are generally being tested to see if we should include them into longer threads to be more powerful. So 10 days before launch, we started posting all of the banger individual tweets and then mostly threads. We're going to repost my personal story and then intersperse that with excerpts from the book. Some long form, some written, which are not going to get a lot of engagement, but there's going to be more attention from the other stuff. And then resharing things like people starting to receive the book. Or, for example, the book has already made 2 lists from some of the biggest book influencers on Twitter of like the best nonfiction books to look forward to in early 2025. It was on one yesterday from Ravi, for example. And so retweeting that kind of stuff, right? And those are relationships, again, that I built over the last 8, 9, 10 months. In addition, I've decided to push a sample chapter now and not actually push pre-orders of the book. So up until now, I was trying to get as many people as possible to pre-order the book. And pre-orders are really important for authors. They act as a sign to book buyers and Amazon that there's demand for the book, for better placement, for bigger orders, for that type of thing. Really, really important for a lot of reasons. I don't really care about like bestseller lists. I know that I'm not going to make it, so that's not part of my strategy. But if it is, then pre-orders are important for that too. And so what I'm doing now, though, is I've kind of realized like everybody in my community that's been listening to me for a while, that is the type of person that would ever pre-order a book, has already pre-ordered it. Like, I don't need to knock them over the head over and over and over again. You know, if you didn't pre-order a book 3 weeks out, you're not going to pre-order a book a week out. You're going to buy it at launch. Some people just like it's crazy how many people are like, oh yeah, I can't wait for that book to come out. I'm going to buy it the second it's out. It's like, yo, just pre-order it and then you get it the second it comes out. We just don't really think that way. And so up until now, I've been pushing the pre-orders, but I switched it to a sample chapter, kind of understanding that philosophy, right? That people are not going at this point to pre-order the book en masse. And so instead, what I'm doing is whenever I talk about the book, I created a sample chapter, which is the introduction and the first chapter. At the end of it is just a little like soft pitch for the book that I had designed into a single PDF, created an automation that delivers that, created a little landing page on my website. And all across my social media now, that's the call to action. In the bios of my accounts says, you know, my book's coming, my book's coming, my book's coming. Get a sample chapter here. Because what I want to do is I want to capture the traffic. I want to give people an opportunity to get a sample. And then they're going to, of course, get the message when the book comes out on the date that it's live. And there'll be that big push then on the day that it comes out that it's live. So I'm doing this in the bios of my accounts. Also, across Instagram particularly, which is where my biggest social media account is right now, is every single day we're posting a coming soon video. Starting from day 5 out, we're going to be posting coming soon videos and also coming soon memes. And all of them have the call to action within them. DM me the word or comment the word, I think, free chapter. And I'll send you a free chapter. Or within my stories on Instagram, that's the call to action, right? All across this place. What I've done is I've set up a many chat automation. And whenever anybody DMs me that word or replies to the story or any of the videos anywhere, right? There's an automated message, DM message, that sends them to that landing page to enter in their email for the free chapter. And then there's another opt-in within ManyChat, within the DMs and Instagram, that says, also, do you want me to remind you the day that the book comes out? And if they tap that, that yes, please remind me, ManyChat will then send them a message on January 14th at 10 a.m., their local time, that says, hey, great news, the book is out, you can buy it. So all that I'm trying to do is set up these reminders to go live on the actual launch day. Any questions on any of that stuff, guys? And before I get into like the podcast tour and the VIP boxes and all that kind of stuff.
You did actually have to write a book and then do all this.
Right.
Because I thought I just never wanted to write a book, but now I know I never want to sell a book either. Thank you for this
information. Selling a book and marketing a book is, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily harder than writing a book, but it feels harder in many ways. It feels like there's more pressure. You're putting your baby out into the world. When you're writing a book, it's kind of this thing that you can enjoy and you can say that you're writing a book and everybody's like, oh, that's great. Good for you. And then when you start putting the book into the world, you put yourself out. You know that you're going to be judged. You know that there's going to be negative reviews. Like Harry Potter is like 2000, like 1-star reviews, right? Like, you know, there's going to be negative reviews no matter how good the book is, no matter how well it's received. And also, they're just, I mean, for the hundreds of thousands of followers that I have, I am prepared for the fact that a tiny percentage of them will buy the book. That's just the reality. Like, if you have 500,000 followers, you're not going to sell 500,000 books. And so, you know, it takes a long time, and it's just a different type of work. It becomes much more personal, I think, the marketing. There's also a lot more people. You have to call in a lot of favors. There's a lot more people say no to you. You figure out very quickly where you stand in certain markets. And I'll talk about that with podcasts, where I had to kind of change my approach. So let's actually get into that. So the common advice you always hear when you come out with a book is get on podcasts. Podcasts are the best place to sell books. Get on as many podcasts as you can. Get on big podcasts. It's like, and that's true, right? Podcasts are probably the best place in the world to sell anything, let alone selling a book. They really, really are. The problem is, of course, podcasts have such an insane power law distribution. It's something like the top 50 podcasts have like 95% of all podcast listenership. And so really, within the business and the marketing and the self-help type worlds, there's probably like 20, 25 podcasts that have the potential to really move the needle. And if you don't get on those, I'm not saying it's a waste of time to be on them, but it might not be actually a great use of time. And so we have our own podcast, which is great, which I would call like medium, you know, tens of thousands of downloads, like medium. But then the bigger podcasts, like, there was just no chance. I mean, we pitched some of them. I had personal introductions from like very important people to some of them. A few said no, some didn't respond. Like, I don't know what I mean, if you think about like the business podcast space, it's like it's basically the same people interviewing the same people over and over again ad nauseum. I don't really know what their end game is, but I figured out very, very quickly that podcasts at launch were not able to be a major player for me. In my industry, in the fitness industry, for sure. You know, I have relationships, I have a reputation in that world. And so niche podcasts, for sure, in the industry that I come from. But in like the general world, like the big podcasts, I realized very quickly that it wasn't going to happen. And so I could have worked really, really hard maybe to get on one or two of them. Instead, what I decided to do was focus my efforts elsewhere on our existing community, on our existing content, on what I hope is going to be viral type videos that are going to go live at the actual launch itself. And then on launch team and things like that, that I've spoken about, and focused more on smaller niche type podcasts for very specific markets. And so like indie authors, a couple in the financial services industry, because I think that that's a great market for the book. And I had some good inroads there. And then of course the fitness and the CrossFit industries. So yes, there will be somewhere around 50 podcasts that go live with me at launch. But I don't think any of them, I mean, a couple of them are bigger, but like I would call medium to big. None of them are like the big ones. I think that the way that the podcast world is now, you kind of have to already have a successful book in order to get on the large podcasts. And then you get on the large podcast and it amplifies the successful book. And so middle of next year, end of next year, the year after that, yes, I'll be looking to get on some of these larger platforms, some of these larger podcasts. But for the launch itself, one of the lessons that I learned is actually podcasts are not a priority. Regardless, what we did is I did go on a lot of podcasts. It helped me craft the message for sure. It's going to help me go deep in a couple very specific markets. It's going to give me tons of content to share myself. Some of the ones that I did live, for example, we got the video from 15 or 20 of the podcasts in advance that I recorded that haven't gone live yet. And my video team has already started to chop them up and is going to be putting them out as shorts and mediums and longs across our own, you know, YouTube is a priority moving forward. So that the minute that the launch happens, we're stocked full of content. So they're good for stuff like that. Talk about the book in different ways, different looks, different scenes, that type of thing. What we did do though, and what I think is really important is that you need to reduce friction as much as possible if you want somebody to promote your thing. You can't expect a podcaster or somebody you send a book to or somebody on your launch team to know how to talk about your book and promote your book for you. And so what we've done is we created, you can actually see it on the p2dc.com now if you go into the bottom navigation, you'll see we created a media page. And this media page will continually update. And the media page, the idea of it is just to make it really easy for people to talk about the book. You know, here's a quick one-line bio about John, four-line bio for John, quick description of the book, little bit longer sell of the book. We created a summary of the entire book. Every chapter has a summary. At the end of the chapter summary are bullet points and then questions to ask John on podcasts. So we give this now to podcasters and they can quickly, they don't have to read through the whole book, right? And come, they can quickly go through it and make it easier. We've got images for them to share, everything that you would need as an asset guide. And so if you come out with a book, you come out with anything that you want to promote, it is perhaps useful to build out a guide of assets for people. On that same note, one thing that we're doing, and we haven't done this yet, but we'll do it in the next couple of days, is everybody on the book launch team and then people who are sending the VIP influencer boxes to, I'm going to send them a message and say, hey, a lot of people have been asking me how they can support this book at launch. Amazing. Like, thank you so much. I'm super grateful. Zero expectation, but I wanted to make it easier for you. I know you've got lots going on. So what we'll do is I actually create a calendar invite that they can then add to their calendar. And this calendar invite is a reminder on the 14th that they add to their calendar. And in that reminder has, hey, today's the Obvious Choice book just came out. If you wanted to support the launch, here's a couple ways that you can do it. Basically, in order of priority, you know, obviously choose whatever you want, but in order of priority of like what actually helps the most at launch. Number one is write an Amazon review. Number two is, you know, take a pic of yourself with the book and post it across social media and tag me. Number three is if you have like a newsletter or, you know, social media accounts, whatever, like create your own post, create an email. You know, here's an asset page that will help you if you want to talk about the book with what to say. You can obviously say whatever you want, but you've got pictures, you've got descriptions, you've got stuff. So again, trying to reduce friction, make it as easy as possible for people there to talk about the book. So putting a lot more effort in that and away from things like really, really trying hard to get on like one of the 10 podcasts that really has the potential to move the needle. In terms of lead magnets, this is actually going back. This maybe should have been in the earlier one, like leading up to it. It's not so much launch, but I created, you know, one of the things that I want to do is I want to create an audience of people for the book that like books, right? A lot of my audience up until now were people who like to lift stuff up and down and tell other people to lift stuff up and down. And so I created branding about a year ago that I called Jack Nerds. And I created a bunch of posts around this and built what I called the Jack Nerds reading list, which was my top 11 books, and did a beautiful job with this PDF. Started promoting that. Started promoting my newsletter, the Five Reps Friday newsletter, as a simple success for Jack Nerds, just really creating this like almost rally cry around this ethical bribe, this opt-in. And then across my social media for the last year or so, I've been promoting this opt-in. I pinned at the top of it. I had a viral post that if you comment the word Jack Nerd, I'll send you, you know, we had a ManyChat automation that sends you the PDF, joins the email list. I've been promoting the PDF onwards. So again, just if you know who your book is for, can you in advance create some sort of opt-in or ethical bribe to really call them out? Test the content that calls out those people and use that to get people onto your email list. So the Jack Nerd reading list was that for me. Okay. The VIP boxes. These are beautiful. Oh, these are beautiful. So a lot of authors send books to influencers, to VIPs in advance of their launch. I've gotten a lot of these. Very rarely have I gotten any of these that have been like in any way good. Oftentimes what they'll do is they'll reach out and they'll say like, hey, can I send you a copy of my book? Or they just have my address before and it just arrives randomly. Like, first of all, you want to ask for permission to send it. I don't want, even if I like you, I don't want your book to just show up at my door. You send me a quick message and say, hey, can I send you a copy of the book? And I will be quite happy to receive it. So number one is I made a list of about 350 names of people who were influential in their own right, right? Maybe people who own communities or are like general influencers or people in the media that I knew that I had a relationship with that I wanted to send a VIP early copy of the book to. The second mistake that a lot of people do is they have their publisher send it out on their behalf. And then the publisher sends the book and they send a form letter and says, here's how you can promote the book. And I didn't like that either. What I'm always trying to do with every time that I spend a dollar online is I'm always trying to figure out a way to maximize the number of impressions and the impact that I get per dollar spent. With advertisements, this comes naturally. Right, you want to maximize your cost per impression or cost per thousand impression or cost per conversion. That's how we measure ads. I think we need to do the same with gifts. We need to figure out a way to maximize it. And so what I did is I put together a really beautiful box and I hired a designer and we pored over every aspect of this. We first said, okay, what how are people going to consume this and how are people going to share this? So number one, this box is going to have to be sent inside of a shipping box. The shipping box is going to be an ugly, like, UPS shipping box. Okay, the only thing that we have control over there is the packing tape. So we got custom packing tape made. We got custom packing tape made. So the outside of the box now has this little, like, oh, this is different. Once you open it and a box comes out, you see the top of the box first. So this is probably not going to be shown on video, the top of the box, or photos that people take that they share. This is just going to be the person consuming it. So I wanted a rally cry on the front of the box. And so we did, we used the phrase, algorithms change, humans don't. And that's also on the inside of the book, right? On the front flap, algorithms change, humans don't. I use that phrase for a few reasons. The book is all about being more human with your marketing. It's also like an us against them. You know, the enemy are these mysterious algorithms that control our lives, that beat us down, that we don't really understand, that are owned by others. And I think it's important to have an enemy with marketing, but the enemy should be either a caricature of a group of people, should be a ridiculous societal norm, or should be an institution. It shouldn't be an individual. And so the algorithm is a really good enemy. So there's an enemy, there's a rally cry right on the top. And then the way that it was designed is we used a very almost robotic font for algorithms change. And then humans, we did almost in a cursive font.
If you've listened this far into the podcast, I want to invite you to buy a copy of my new book, The Obvious Choice. It's available now. A lot of people have been asking me what the book's about. The central premise is that it's learning how to position yourself as the clear and trusted answer to a specific group's problems. You see, a lot of people these days are trying to become famous to the faceless, anonymous internet instead of becoming the obvious choice to a smaller amount of people who are going to buy from you. It's actually much better, much more profitable, much easier, and much faster, and much less stressful to be obviously perfect to a smaller amount of people than just okay to a lot of people who are never going to buy you. You see, you don't need to be the best at everything or chase the largest audience. You need to become the most relevant to your people. What I do is I emphasize the importance of understanding your audience's needs, meeting them where they already are, and delivering such value that choosing anyone else feels irrational. And so pick up a copy of the book. It's in Kindle, it's in Audible, it's in hardcover, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it.
With the orange that's like the premier color for the book, we use that orange with humans in almost like a cursive font, and then don't again is the kind of robotic font. We also embossed the humans word, so it has more texture to it. Again, it has more life to it. It has more humanity to it. All of these little things. And then the box itself is textured, and we did some stuff with the placement that's like design centric that probably only if you're a design nerd you would really like. Anyway, it's white on the outside. It's all white on the outside. Then you open the box and immediately you get hit with the splash of this orange that's like the color of the book. You get hit with this massive splash of orange. And then there's one quote top left that's from the book, which is find your good, close the book, and execute. And again, I like that because that was the single line with all of the beta readers that almost across the board, every single person highlighted. And they were like, fuck yeah. So again, data driven. We know that this is a winner. We've tested it. That's the top left. And then I signed it, you know, so then there's like my signature, like John, like this is from a human, right? And then the book comes, and the way that the book is packaged, I think the unboxing experience for the individual is very important. How you place things in the box is very important, but also how the box appears when it's open. And so what we figure most people will do when they share a picture of it is they'll share a picture either of opening the box, that splash of orange, or with the box open with the components inside of it. Either way, you've got that splash of orange, you've got that. We need to have the name of the book in there. And you want to show the components. And so we created this almost this felt pad. And then there's the book on the bottom with the words earn more, compete less, just poking out on top. But then over top of it, there's two gifts that I included. The first gift is a Casio watch. So I bought 300 Casio F91Ws, and I included them in the book. Okay, why did I do this? Again, I'm always trying to maximize ad spend impression. I'm always trying to be a little bit different. Casio watches are relatively inexpensive. They ship more or less for free because they're light. But you wear them every single day. They tell a story. And the story I tell in the letter that comes with the books. So they tell a story. They're personal to me. And it's something to talk about. Nobody's going to throw out this Casio watch. They're probably going to wear it. They're going to wear it to work out all of the time. So now, even if that person doesn't open the book, they're going to wear that Casio watch. Other people will come, oh yeah, I got it from, you know, I got it with this book that I got. Now my book is being inserted into the conversation naturally over the course of the day, the month, the year, moving forward. Because unlike an Apple watch, Casio watches you use for years and years and years and don't need to change the battery or recharge. So there's the Casio watch. And then there's a metallic bookmark. The metallic bookmark, again, has a quote on it about fear. I wanted a more generic quote, not specific to marketing. I wanted a more self-help quote about fear, about how failure is like a bee sting. And so I included that quote from the book, and it's a little bit longer quote, and it's on a metallic. And again, that quote was pulled out by multiple beta readers as being something that was really impactful to them. And it's something that's a really good reminder. And I had it stamped on a metallic bookmark. One of the key things with gifting, this is advice from the late John Rulin, from his book Giftology, is with a gift, your aim is to maximize the number of impressions and to deliver something that, while inexpensive, is top of class or best of class. Bookmarks that are genuinely included in these types of packages are like paper bookmarks. They cost 15, 20 cents. You throw them out. You don't keep them. A metallic bookmark like this cost me $6. Really not expensive at all. But it's a metal bookmark. It's not going to get thrown out. Ever. So again, $6 instead of 20 cents in this package, it flies for free as part of the package, is going to be used as a bookmark, not just in my book, but in all the books that that person reads. Reminding them of me, of my books. Neither the watch nor the bookmark are the type of thing that's going to have the impact on day one to like crank more sales. I mean, maybe the watch, it'll be kind of funny. People will be talking about it. People will be sharing it, whatever. I'll be tagged in pictures of people wearing the watches, right? But it's buying impressions, okay? Then there's a letter that comes to the book that's Read Me First. The letter introduces the book itself. It shares one of the endorsements, or at least a piece of the endorsement from Sam Parr, you know, host of My First Million. Again, if you don't really know who I am, but you accepted a copy of the book, which is the case for some people, and you're in a world that I'm not, like if you're in the fitness world, even if you're really influential, you probably know who I am. But if you're in the marketing world and you're influential, you might not know who I am, but you probably know and respect Sam. So that's why I use Sam's quote in that letter. Tells the story of the Casio watch, but also says, I tagged one or two sections in the book for you that I thought that you'd like. So then they take that off. Then they have the book. And each copy of the book, on the inside of it, on the inside page, has a sticker that we got custom designed that's pasted on the inside with a personal note for me signed. And then in the book itself has a post-it note in at least one of the pages with their name at the top of it, with an arrow pointing down saying like, Ren, you'll love this. Or if they appear in the book, be like, Ren, look, it's you, with an arrow pointing down. If they're in the acknowledgements, you know, same type of thing. Whenever I get a book from somebody, the odds that I'm going to open up that book and read the whole thing is pretty slim. But if somebody says, hey, there's this one page that I think you're really going to love, 100% I'm going to crack open the book. And maybe I'll like it so much that I'll go back to the beginning and start reading the book. It might also just not be a topic that I'm interested in reading at that moment.
Either way, I've cracked open the book, and especially if I'm in it, I've seen my name. Now I have some ownership. Now I've got some skin in the game. It makes a big, big difference. So how did I do this? It was actually a huge pain in the butt because the books are going out now, like yesterday and today, from a fulfillment center in Toronto. I'm in Mexico. I left Toronto before the books from the publisher arrived to our fulfillment center in Toronto. And so what I did is I created a huge spreadsheet with all of the names of all of the people getting the book. I reached out to all of them one by one by one. And it's a huge pain because, of course, some people email, other people WhatsApp, Telegram, Facebook, Instagram, text message. Well, you get their address. I had to follow up with people multiple times to get their messages. Some people never responded, right? So of the 300 or so names on there, there's about 215 packages that are going out. You know, some people never responded. A couple people were traveling and nomadic at the time, and they said, you know, basically, I just bought your Kindle. I can't wait to read it. But I have no address. You can't send me a physical book right now. So there's about 215 going out. So I sat down. I went to the fulfillment center, about 20 minutes from my house, with all of the stickers, with piles of sticky notes, and I went through my list. And I had already on my list documented the page number that I thought that they would like, each person individually in the book. You know, Ren, oh, I know him. He's going to really jive with what's on page 72, whatever, right? Or Ren is in the acknowledgments. So then what I did is each person, of course, his name was on a spreadsheet. And so their name corresponded with the number of the row on the spreadsheet. So Ren, you might have been numbered like 37. So on the stickers that I signed for the name, I wrote the little number 37 in the bottom left corner so that the fulfillment center knows that this sticker goes with the recipient that corresponds to the spreadsheet in number 37. I then wrote the sticky notes. Again, all of this was by hand. I then wrote the sticky notes and I wrote the name. And then on the bottom left corner, I wrote the page number that the sticky note goes in. Page 72. If it was going to the acknowledgments, ACK. The fulfillment center then takes that whole list. They take all of the labels for shipping that were bought from the publisher, and they compiled all of these things together. And so in book number 37, they know that it's Ren's sticker. They know that the sticky notes that are on the top of the sticker go in page 72 in the acknowledgments. They stick them in. I told them exactly how to stick them in. The sticky notes are upside down with the sticky part down, with the sticky notes sticking up out so that the words, you know, Ren, you'll love this, with an arrow pointing down, go down into the book so that they can see that above the book when they pull the book out. And then I told them exactly how to pack the passages, the packages with the book, you know, flat, the sticky notes are folded down so that when they took the book out, the sticky notes will flop out and you'll see them right away. They're compiling all of that. They know that this goes with number 37 on the spreadsheet with that address. And then they get everything out into the mail to be delivered. It is a tremendous amount of effort. But think about the impact of something like that, that you arrive, that arrives at your place. You know how hard it is. It is... It's a behavioral psychological term called costly signaling. It is so well accepted that this is a tremendous amount of effort and really fucking hard to pull off, that that is the value. By definition, it's human. It's unscalable. That is the value. In a world where everybody is trying to automate every single thing that they do and trying to be as scaled and as efficient as possible, when you're trying to build relationships with people, actually, the way to make an impact, the way to stand out, is to do these unscalable things that are human, that are personal, that are even a little bit silly, like including a Casio F91W, and figuring out a way to enter yourself in that person's home and gain impressions so that even if they're not ready to read your book or think about you or support you that day, that month, you're going to be there for years to come. This is how you don't depend on the algorithm, by the way. You've got to get past it. I cannot rely on Instagram feeding my content to somebody on any given day. I can't. And so spending $6 instead of 20 cents on a bookmark is my way of playing my own game, of opting out of that. So that's the VIP boxes. Strategic bulk buys. I'll talk about this really, really quick. There haven't been a lot of bulk buys for the book because I didn't push bulk buys that much. I reached out to some friends, and some of them did, some of them didn't, in like business communities that I was in. But more than anything else, what I did is I kind of said, what's the number one industry that I want to have an everywhere effect in? Well, I want there to be a lightning strike. I want it to seem like every single person that you admire in the industry is talking about my book in a very short period of time. And that industry for me was CrossFit. CrossFit is in the center of that Venn diagram for me, right? It's something that's personal to me. It's a world that I know. If you want to create word of mouth, work backwards from people who don't shut up about stuff they already like, well, that's CrossFitters. And then, so what's that? That's the center of that Venn diagram, right? And then who do you have access to? Who you already have a reputation towards, right? They're in the fitness industry. And so the speaking engagements that I accepted last year were all in exchange for bulk buys of the book, you know, a certain dollar amount, significant dollar amount of bulk buys of the book. But the deal was very specific. The deal was you are buying X amount of dollars of the book, and you're not buying those books to send to a fulfillment center or to hand out at your next conference. What you're doing is you are going to pre-order that number of books, and you're going to send this company called Porchlight that fulfills this type of custom thing. You're going to send them a spreadsheet of names and addresses of your customers, and you're going to buy all of them a book that's going to arrive on launch day or close to launch day. So that, for example, Two Brain Business is a company that I did this with. I spoke at their big event. And so that they, you know, 500 or something of the top Two Brain customers are all going to be getting a copy of this book arriving as a surprise on their doorstep all around the same time. Two Brain serves basically all of the top business leaders and business owners in the CrossFit industry. Did the same thing with Kilo Gym Software, which is gym software that powers a lot of the CrossFit boxes. They did a bulk buy for their top customers as well. And all of them are being sent with a note that says, hey, basically, we thought you'd love this book. We bought you a copy. Think about the difference now between a book that you buy versus a book that's gifted to you by somebody who you've spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars with. And so, you know, let's say that there's going to be 1,000 of these copies that arrive at CrossFit box owners in Canada and the United States, which is not too far off. Well, somebody who's deep in that world, who's a CrossFit coach, who's business-minded, let's say, is not just going to be following one of them. Is going to be following 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 of them. And all of those people are going to be sharing my book at the same time. You see, we all exist in this bubble, in our own little filter bubbles. And so it's possible with the right amount of focus to create this lightning strike campaign, this everywhere effect in very specific industries so that you become the obvious choice to that industry in a very short, condensed period of time. And that was my goal with the launch. It was understanding that I'm not going to be I'm not Tony Robbins, right? And so I can't play that game. What I need to do is I need to become the obvious choice. I need to go deep into a very well-chosen and build my entire strategy on going deep into a very well-chosen kind of small market. And then the final thing that we're doing is meme videos. We are going to be posting a video every hour for at least the first 2 days of the launch across every single one of my social media accounts. And they're funny. They're silly. their videos where like the book is badly superimposed over the character's head, like famous scenes from all these movies. And then interspersed with videos of me, like some really like creative videos of me. I had videographers out for 3 days and we were shooting a bunch of content, but we shot these videos as well with the book. It's either really, really genius or unbelievably stupid. I don't know which one, truthfully. But if you look at the cover of the book, The Obvious Choice, you see that there's the whales and there's the minnows. And that's my business philosophy. That's my personal philosophy towards life. That is, make it for you expensive. If you're going to do the thing, do the fucking thing, or don't do it. Don't go anywhere in the middle. Be aggressive. Go all in. And so that's what we're doing with this video strategy. We're going all in. And it's fun. And it's silly. And I don't know whether it will work. It's possible this will set a new standard for book launches. I've never seen it before. It's also possible that it's unbelievably stupid. But it's probably not anywhere in between. And if I think about the goal, you know, the reason why it came about is I thought about what I'm trying to accomplish, like the day, the week that the books come out. I've taken 3 years to write this book. I've taken 8 months plus to market this book to get to this point. Ain't nothing I can say at launch that's going to convince people who I was already talking to buy this book now. And so my goal now turns to people who are already listening. Let's try to get them to buy, like make it exciting, make an announcement, make it an event. Let's figure out a way to celebrate and have fun with the launch. And let's just get as many eyeballs on this thing as possible at the launch. Even if people don't buy. You know, at launch, what are you going to do, right? How are you going to talk about, hey, everybody, my book is live, post number one. Post number two, hey, did you see my book came live today? Post number three, hey, this other person said that my book is good. Post number four, did you see my post about when that other person said my post was good? Well, this other person said my book was good. Hey, here's a sample of my book. Like, you only got so many bullets in that gun. How can you figure out a way to talk about your book? How can you figure out a way to talk about your thing? How can you earn the right to talk about your thing as often as possible in an almost obnoxious way? So people can't get away from it. But don't actually mind hearing about it all the time. Right around the launch. Well, poke fun at yourself, which is what I'm doing. Use scenes from their favorite movies. Matt Damon in, you know, How Do You Like Them Apples? Right? That famous scene. What's that movie on?
That's How Do You Like... Oh, A Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, and Good Will Hunting. You know that How Do You Like Them Apples scene, right? Well, what do you think is happening? What do you think one of the videos is? Is Matt Damon walks up, knocks on the glass. Hey, you like apples? Yeah? Well, I got a number. How do you like them apples? Slams the phone number across the glass, right? Well, you know what the meme is for that? The meme for that is we have the captions for the whole thing, but we strategically change some of the words of the captions. So it's like, well, I got the obvious choice. How do you like them apples? And then the book is badly superimposed badly over the phone number and slapped against the glass.
Badly.
Genius or stupid? I'm not sure. But again, you know, so much of the obvious choice is working backwards from the problem and playing your own game. What's the problem? Right? The problem is I want to talk about my book as much as humanly possible at launch. I can't possibly share content from the book on social media. It just doesn't hit.
Right.
It just doesn't hit. So maybe once or twice I can do that. I can have a big announcement, right? But I can have fun with it. I can poke fun at it. I can use memes, which are the native language of the internet, just as a way to talk about this thing, right? As much as possible. Whales and minnows, though, if when we decided to do it, we weighed all of our options of what content to post across social media. When we decided that this was what we were going to do, that's all, man. All fucking in. Whales and minnows. Do it or don't do it. Right? But if you do it, goddamn, do it.
So much of my senior year book says that.
Do it or don't do it.
That left me, no, genius or stupid.
Oh, and then the final post of marketing is inside the book itself. There are multiple places where people can opt in for additional resources. And so right at the beginning, for example, in the first chapter, if you can see here, if you're watching on YouTube, there's a QR code and there's a URL, right? I recommend all authors do this. You know, these are worksheets. These are additional recommended resources, that type of thing. I think there's 7 in the book. Already, I've had 120 opt-ins on that. The book doesn't come out for 6 days. That's just through sample copies. And so what we're doing there is continuing to build the email list from this book for additional books. What I'm also going to do, I haven't done it yet, is I'm going to build just a very, very short automation on the back end of that, you know, deliver the worksheets and stuff, email one, but then ask people how they like the book. Once they respond, ask them to write a review on Amazon and use that as a way to continue to get reviews on Amazon as well. That's the final thing I think I had on my list. You know, there's ongoing content that we're doing. We'll get into that in a later episode because that's more detailed. I'm making a big push into YouTube. And then, you know, the best way to sell a book. Wren, do you know the best way to sell a book is?
I have no idea. I'm exhausted from what I've heard.
The single best way to sell a book is to write the next book. Single best way. And so the obvious challenge comes out March or April 2026. First draft is already finished. Links back to the obvious choice. Brings it more into the self-help realm, which is really the obvious choice as a business book, but like really it's a business book with like a self-help edge to it. Mm-hmm. And the two will be bought together, right? I actually don't anticipate the obvious choice to really take off until at least the obvious challenge comes out. Because what happens is everybody who got the obvious choice, when challenge comes out, the first thing they'll say is, you know, they'll share, hey, just pre-ordered this book. Yo, his last one was really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is now people start buying the last one. Right? Best way to sell a book is to write the next one. It's a lot. But having fun with it. And I think that's the key thing.
Well, good job, John. Damn it. You've done well. I thought you were just pissing away your Canadian winters and Mexican summers. But you're actually doing the work, man. I'm proud of you. I froze for some reason.
Yeah.
Good freeze.
Because I say Canadian. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely doing
something. It's a pretty cool freeze, though.
Yeah. All right. End it. Let's get out of here.
Hey, real quick, I wanted to invite you to buy a copy of my new book. It's called The Obvious Choice. And instead of me telling you about how good it is, what I'm going to do is just read a couple of the endorsements of others. So the first is from Jason Pfeiffer. He's the editor-in-chief for Entrepreneur Magazine. So you can imagine this guy has seen a lot of business books. Here's what he said about The Obvious Choice. He said, if you want to win in business without feeling like you have to win the internet, get this book. It can help any marketer, small business owner, and entrepreneur. Okay, here's another one from Harley Finkelstein. He is actually the president of Shopify. Again, If you want to find somebody who knows how to sell stuff, particularly sell stuff online, but really anywhere, like somebody who is the president of Shopify, probably knows what he's talking about. So here's what he said. He said, consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. Every entrepreneur is going to get actionable takeaways from this read. If you're selling something, you need this book in your life. Trust me, you won't regret it. There's more endorsements you'll find on the Amazon page. Those aren't the only two, of course, but I'll stop there. Please go and buy a copy of the book. It's in hardcover. It's in Kindle. It's in audio. On Amazon, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it.